It's 8:08 on your Friday morning. Good morning. Happy weekend to you. Hope your final day at work is a good one. Soundgarden is your artist of the day. My name is Will Nall. Peter Labardius alongside, taking over the morning show. Pinder will be back next week. And I believe Boomer will be back too. Jay, is that accurate?
I believe so, but who the hell knows?
Yeah, fair enough. What a beating. What a beating.
Boom Boom might ask for another week off. You never know.
Safe to say, Jay's not overly impressed with his host.
I was going to say, you can tell someone's not that impressed.
No, I love the guy. I'm just saying, it's completely possible. He might be gone another week out of nowhere.
I don't blame him. So, you know, you take it when you can get it.
Warner's been off for 2 months and has another 2 months left.
Although I heard he did host a show this week.
I love it. Love that guy, too. He showed up, brought us breakfast. It was great.
That's terrific.
Saved the show.
That's terrific. Warner's so bored, he comes in on his days off. I love it. Love it.
He's a good man.
He is a good man.
I'd like to be here, but man, I got all this vacation I got to take.
Another good man is Ryan Pinder. He is not here today, as I mentioned. He's going to be back next week. But a new thing that kicks off today, brought to you by our good friends at Glenmore Audi. Pinder is a man with many opinions. I don't think that's any secret. And on Fridays, he takes to the streets of downtown Calgary looking for somebody to agree with. Anybody, really. This week on Pin It with Pinder, we hear what Pinder is talking about with some of the listeners, and boy, oh boy, let's see if somebody agrees with him. Here is Pin It on Pinder.
Pin It on Pinder, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Audi Q5 is the only crossover that performs like a sports car, engineered to exceed your expectations. Test drive one at Glenmore Audi.
All right, it's Pinder here. I'm on 17th Avenue. I have absolutely minimal idea of what I'm supposed to do. This is textbook Kirsch. He has sold something to an amazing sponsor in Glenmore Audi, but we have no idea what it is, and he's on vacation. So I don't know if this is half-assing it or if this is, making do as best one can with minimal information. So it's called Pin It on Pinder. I'm just talking with people on the street, and I guess that's what it is. We're supposed to give away prizes, but I have no prizes. I mean, it's very cursed. So maybe today we'll ask people if they've ever had a boss that's completely half-assed something. We'll see what the consensus is. So I've just gone to the bank. I've got some American money. I'm off to Montana this weekend. So that's out of the way. Now I'm on 17th Avenue. We can chat with some people and see if they've got half-assed bosses like, you know, some people might. Clearly, I don't. I wouldn't suggest that, would I? All right, how you doing? What's your name?
Nick.
Nick, have you ever had a boss that was, like, just incredibly half-assed in things he did and maybe asked you to complete tasks without really any sort of information on how to do them?
Sure, yes.
Can you give me an example, like, of a time where you're like, geez, I wish my boss actually knew what the hell was going on here?
Yeah, I mean, kind of put me on the spot there.
It's true. That's how I feel. See, I've been asked to talk to people on the street. It's just there's been no topic given. So now I'm on the street asking if other people have been thrust into action on silly tasks. Like another classic move from a boss that I may or may not have at the current moment is just a forward. So he'll have an email that has something to do with me. And just rather than say, hey, a follow up on this or just FYI or maybe give this guy a call. It's just a straight forward with no information. Do you ever get any of those?
Not recently. Yeah. I mean, currently where I work, it's pretty straightforward, but I mean, it's an easier job, so.
What's your occupation? What do you do?
Right now I'm like a server in a restaurant, so there's not too much to worry about with that.
How would you feel if I told you I have a coworker that doesn't tip waiters? He's got a no tipping policy.
Well, personally, I don't really believe in the whole tipping thing, and I believe that you should go more like Europe and people shouldn't pay their employees, not the customers, but that's just my opinion.
All right, that's a hot take. I like it. So bosses have been good, but maybe some changes to come in the tipping universe. Boy, no offense to Nick or whatever that guy's name was, but that really sucked. Like, this isn't good enough for air. This is chicken bleep. This is bunk. Gonna find someone else to talk to that can form a sentence without putting people to sleep. It's probably on me, to be honest. Well, then, of course, if it's on me, then it's probably on Kirsch because I have no idea what I'm doing. But hey, Dependent on Pinder for Glenmore Audi. What a gem. Well, let's find one more person. Hi, what's your name?
Haley.
Haley, what do you do for work?
I'm a nurse.
Okay, so I work in radio, and I have a boss who sent me out on the street to talk with people without giving me a topic. So I'm wondering if your boss has ever, you know, thrown you under the bus like that or been extremely unprepared for an event.
No, not that I can think of.
So here's the thing, like, I'm supposed to give a prize away to the best answer, but I haven't even got prizing. Like, are you understanding how inept my boss is?
Yeah, that doesn't sound ideal.
What sort of day at work, what does that look like for you as a nurse? Is there a specialty or an area you work in?
Internal medicine. It's kind of a bit of everything.
So it's probably a good thing that your boss knows what's happening and that you're not just sort of wandering around the streets doing random medicine and nursing work, right?
No, yeah. It's good to know what's supposed to be happening.
Thank you for your contributions today. I know it's been scintillating conversation, so enjoy your Thursday. It's lovely out.
Good luck with your interviews.
And my boss, yeah.
And wish your me. Boss.
Thank you. Appreciate that. All right, so it seems like people tend to have bosses that know what they're doing, at least in our massive sample size of two people. And we also found a waiter who doesn't like tipping, and a nurse who just hasn't been forced into working on the street for her occupation in terms of performing nursing duties on 17th Avenue. So there you have it. That's about all the time I'm going to dedicate to this gem. Off I go to Montana in the Q5. Cannot wait. I'll be back on Monday, as should the rest of the crew. Boom Boom and DeForest as well. So we will talk to you then. Godspeed. This has been Pin It on Pinder for Glenmore Audi.
Pin It on Pinder, brought to you by Glenmore Audi. The Audi Q5 is the only crossover that performs like a sports car, engineered to exceed your expectations. Test drive one at Glenmore Audi.
Boom!
Boy, I love Pinder.
Oh boy, was that bad.
I love Pinder as much as the next guy, but man, put in a little effort.
Are you kidding me?
Wow.
Biggest mistake ever. Come on.
I don't know if the beating was really needed.
I don't know where to go with that.
That was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, all right.
A morning on this station where I swear I heard the two words dead deer again.
As Jason laughs in the background.
Of course he did. We get this. Yeah, there you go.
Dead deer.
Oh, man. Yeah, that might have been one of the worst five-minute things I've ever sat through
in my
life.
Well, it was, again, you know.
Punch me in the face.
Yep. Yeah. And I know that he bashed.
I'd rather not.
Man, a little effort probably would have been good in there.
That turned a lot of people off.
I know our next guest will not turn a lot of people off.
Was that at the convention last night, that little deal?
I don't know. Jason, where did you get that one?
Can you build a wall with that?
Whoa. I heard that speech went well, too. We say good morning to Andrew Buckholz.
That lasted about 17 days. Yeah, let's get on to sports.
Let's absolutely do that. Andrew Buckholz from Yahoo covers the CFL, and last night we saw our first game of Week 5 with the Stampeders and the Blue Bombers. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
Pretty good, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for joining us. And I guess we'll start with the Stampeders, this 33-18 victory in Winnipeg. Your thoughts last night on the Stampeders and the Blue Bombers?
Yeah, I think it was a good win for the Stampeders. I thought in particular their offense looked great early on. Bo Levi Mitchell just came out guns blazing and really took Winnipeg's defense apart. I think the Stampeders still aren't quite where they want to be. They still have potential to grow, but they were more than good enough to get the win here. It helped that Winnipeg had so many guys in the secondary get hurt, plus some injuries on the offensive line and so on. But Calgary was very much the better team, and they look to be in a much better place than Winnipeg going forward.
Another great performance from Bo Levi Mitchell, especially late in the fourth quarter. He kills 5 minutes off the clock, scores a touchdown, and puts the game on ice for the Stampeders. 33-18 would be the score at that time. It would end up being the final. Bo Levi has really turned into quite the name in this league and is quite the leader for this team. He's now 37-1 as a starting quarterback in 38 starts in this league. Your thoughts on number 19 for the Calgary Stampeders?
Yeah, I think that Bo Levi Mitchell has become one of the best quarterbacks in this league. The other day, actually, I was asked to consider who I would take if I could pick any quarterback in this league to build a team around, and I said I'd go with Bo Levi Mitchell, just based on the combination of what he's done so far, how young he still is, and the number of different ways he can help you out. He's good at hitting a lot of different targets down the field. He's good at spreading the ball around. He can be very mobile in the pocket and evade pressure. And I think he is one of the best quarterbacks in this league. So it's going to him has turned out really well for Calgary, and I think he'll have another great year this season.
Andrew Buckholz from Yahoo Sports is our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Lou?
Andrew, on the other side of the coin, things are not going well at all in Winnipeg. Have we seen the last of Drew Willey for a while, or with the financial investment they've made, can they go in this direction?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a big question. And head coach Michael Shea said after this one that he won't name a starter for next week's game against Edmonton yet. So obviously, based on this one, Drew Willey struggled. Matt Nichols looks good and looks better, at least, in relief. And so there will certainly be some pressure to go that way. But I'm not sure either of those guys is really going to be the answer long term. Because with Willie, there was a lot of potential that we saw at times over the last couple of years. But then there were injuries, there were issues with his receivers, issues with his offensive line. Those have all been fixed. He doesn't have any excuses anymore, and his play this year just has not been up to the level it needs to be at. So I think eventually they're going to go away from him, whether that's this week or next or a couple of weeks down the road, we'll find out. But I'm not really sure that going to Matt Nichols is going to get the job done either. So I think one interesting guy to watch is going to be Dominique Davis, the younger quarterback they have. He played a little bit at the end of last year. He may wind up getting a shot before this season is over.
And to make matters worse, more injuries last night on the offensive line, which saw a defensive lineman change over to finish the game on that side of the ball, which is never a good thing. And their defensive backfield was just devastated. So here they are in an absolute world of trouble, and nothing is getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the offensive line injuries, Jamarcus Hardrick going down last night, that's a bad one. Losing three different defensive backs and a lot of guys who have been very good for them, that's a real problem. And I think in some ways it shows that the Bombers don't have that great of depth. They've got some excellent top quality players on their roster, but when you start losing some of these guys, that's where the depth is really exposed. And the better teams in this league, it hurts when you lose a top guy, certainly, but they do seem to have an ability to replace them a little better than Winnipeg has. So I think you've got to look at general manager Kyle Walters a little bit with that. I think he's improved this team substantially over where it was when he got it, because Joe Mack left the cupboard really bare, but there still isn't enough depth there. There still aren't enough players to fill in when guys do go down. And so there'll be people looking at him. There'll be people looking at head coach Michael Shea. I mean, nothing in Winnipeg's really working right now.
Andrew Buckholz covers the CFL for Yahoo. He's our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Back to the Stampeders for just a second, because that offense has been good, but yet it still feels like they're not really all on the same page right now. There's still some banged up bodies. Joe West now on the 6-game injured list. Would you agree? Is there more to be said about the Stampeder offense?
Yeah, I think there's another gear they can hit. I think they've been good, certainly, so far, but the offense hasn't hit what it's capable of. And some of that is the changes in personnel from year to year. They're having to get used to playing without a guy like Eric Rogers this year and needing other people to step up. They've got Bakari Grant coming in and trying to fit into that offense. So I think there's certainly more they can do, especially on that side of the ball. I think the defense has been really strong so far this year, and the offense has been good enough, and there's reason to think it'll get even better.
Is there a reason right now that fans in Calgary should be worried about Rene Paredes? I know, you know, it looks like maybe he's had some struggles. Certainly you can look at it in the numbers and you look at him on the field. I don't know whether it's an injury or what the case is, but something is clearly not right with this guy right now. He's already missed two point afters and he missed two last night. What are your thoughts right now on Rene Paredes?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly concerning. I think that he certainly isn't having a great year so far. And if there's an injury or something, then that may be an issue. Then maybe they need to sit him down and look at somebody else. But if not, I think you keep going with him and you give him time to get through it. And I think it's important to look at the overall sample size of kickers too. Mm. If you look at just this year, yeah, Paredes is having one of the worst years out there, and one of the best is Liram Hadjialalhu, which I can never say properly, but he's a guy who, I mean, if you look at those guys over the course of their careers, Rene Paredes is by far the better kicker and the guy that you would much rather have based on the overall career. So I think he's been so good in this league and he's done so much well that I don't think you go away from him unless it's an injury. I think you give him time to sort of work through it and see what he can do and see if he can get back to being himself.
If there isn't an injury, if you're John Huffnagle, do you bring somebody in to maybe provide some competition and make him, I don't know, just kind of put that in the back of his mind, or would you just kind of leave it and let him work through it?
Yeah, I think you can never really go wrong with bringing somebody in just to see what they can do. And I think there are always enough promising kickers out there floating around. There's always a bunch of guys who have played in this league and have done well. So I think doing that wouldn't be the worst move in the world. I think if you do that, you make it clear to Paredes that he's not losing his job right away, but he does need to perform. But I don't think having low competition is a bad idea.
Andrew Buchholz is our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Lou?
Andrew, tonight the Ottawa Red Blacks in Saskatchewan to take on the Rough Riders. No Darian Durant, a huge concern. On a positive side of the ledger, how impressed are you with what Ottawa has done, really almost in its infancy, and it doesn't look like they're doing anything but getting better?
Yeah, absolutely. The Ottawa Red Blacks have just been a phenomenal story with how they have the typical expansion team year. Their first season really struggled, only won a couple of games. And then last year, they turned out to be one of the best teams in the league. And this year, they've been the league's most dominant team so far. I think a lot of things have gone very right for them. For one, general manager Marcel Desjardins made very shrewd moves at quarterback, bringing in Henry Burris first, and then this offseason bringing in Trevor Harris to back up Burris. And Harris has been just so good for them. They haven't missed the league's reigning most outstanding player at all, given how well that Harris is playing. I think it helps that Ottawa has so many phenomenal receivers. They had four guys who had over 1,000 yards last year, and that certainly makes the quarterback's life easier. But they've found success in a whole lot of areas. I mean, they've got an excellent offensive line, they've got a great defense, and they've got a couple of the best Canadians on defense in this league. And they're just a really good, really impressive team, one that's built very well across the board, and one that seems to be able to take whatever is thrown at them.
And what have your thoughts been on the Rough Riders to this point in time? We knew there was a lot of work that had to be done. Chris Jones maybe realizing maybe even more than he thought, but what's your take on them early on?
Yeah, I mean, I think their early struggles could be predicted. I think people in Saskatchewan, a lot of people in Saskatchewan were too optimistic about them and too optimistic that everything would be fixed with Chris Jones coming in. It takes time, and it takes more time when you have a new head coach and general manager, an entirely new coaching staff, a very significantly turned over roster. All of that's going to take time to gel. So I don't think it... I don't think it's a crisis that they've lost their first three games. I think what's more concerning is that they've lost their first three games and haven't looked good in most of them, and they haven't really shown improvement in a lot of areas. And I think it could get very rough for them now that Darian Durant's out, because he's actually been playing pretty well. He's been one of the bright spots. And the rest of the quarterbacks on that roster came in either this month or last month, so they're still barely used to the Rough Riders playbook. I think it could get pretty rough for the Rough Riders, but I mean, this is about the long term, though, and I don't think we can really judge what Chris Jones is doing there until the end of this year or maybe even next year.
Last one for you, Andrew. Impossible to answer, but it's kind of hard to wrap your head around the home team records in 2016, 3-13-1. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it?
It sure is, yeah. And it's a long way from what we've typically seen in this. I do think it'll normalize a little bit over the course of the year, because a lot of the times it's about the particular teams involved, not necessarily the home and away. If you look at like last night's game, Calgary's a heavy favorite and won despite the game being in Winnipeg. I think the one thing that's really probably contributed to the away teams doing so well so far this year is a lot of the home teams have been making major changes, whether that's in coaches, whether that's in personnel, and so on. And they've been I think they've been maybe too hyped up to get out there and put on a great performance in their home opener or their second home game and show off what all these new guys can do. And I think the road teams have come in with a little less pressure and a little less expectations, and that's maybe been helpful. But it certainly has been the year of the road team so far.
Andrew, I know it's early for you. I appreciate you getting up and chatting with us. Always fun, and I'm sure we'll catch up down the road.
No problem. Thanks a lot for having me, guys.
It's Andrew Buchholz from Yahoo Sports. He covers the CFL and some fantastic stuff as Week 5 continues tonight in Regina. Rough Riders at home to the Red Blacks. Andrew Buchholz joins us down the South Street Burger Guest Hotline. Delight in a flame grill burger and choose from over 30 gourmet toppings. Satisfy your cravings with South Street Burger. Better burgers, fries, and shakes. We'll take a break around the corner. We'll chat up with Arash Madani of Sportsnet. The Rogers Cup set to begin on Monday in Toronto and Montreal. But first, before we hit the break, I do have to chime in because the text line was in love with that Pinder segment. I'll read some of them at 960-960. Pinder is really selling this. This is hands down the worst radio segment in 960 history. This is really awful. Holy cow. Killed this segment. Please never do this again. Oh, God, pinning it on Pinder is awful. That was cringeworthy. Even when he's on vacation, Pinder still finds a way to be half-assed. What the F was that? Pinned on Pinder, instant classic. The only good part about the show today is Lou. Pinned on Pinder, sounds like it pinned on Kirsch. Clean it up. And, dear Pinder, have fun in Montana forever. Signed, Kirsch. So there's some of the reaction to Pinned on Pinder, which debuted today for Glenmore Audi. We'll take a break around the corner. Arash Madani, it is 8:31 on Friday morning. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Boomer in the morning with Ryan Pinder. Sportsnet 960.
On your Friday morning. Soundgarden is your artist of the day. My name is Will Nall. Peter Labardi is alongside as well. Continue along on your Friday morning. Second round of the RBC Canadian Open underway from Oakville, Ontario. 21-year-old Calgary-born amateur Jared Dutoit set the tee off in just under 4 hours. See what he can repeat in round number two. Coming up on Monday, it's the beginning of the Rogers Cup in Toronto and Montreal. The men in Toronto, the women in Montreal. And Arash Madani of Sportsnet is there covering it. And we welcome in right now. Arash, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing, Will?
I'm good, man. And I guess we'll start with a decision that happened last week as Milos Raonic announced on Facebook he will skip the Rio Olympics due to concerns of Zika, other health concerns, and some security concerns as well in there. You talked to Milos. Tell us about that chat and what you learned from the young man. It sounds like it still was and still is a pretty tough decision for him.
Well, listen, this whole Zika thing has turned into a get-out-of-jail-free card for a lot of athletes, especially in individual sports, especially for the athletes who are making millions of dollars. Talking about the golfers, talking about the tennis players, it's a convenient excuse to say, amidst a really busy stretch of the schedule where there are millions of dollars to be made and valuable tour points to be had, I don't feel like getting on a plane for 12 hours down there, 12 hours back, dealing with the pollution, potentially the Zika, but just disrupting my routine and my schedule and all the distractions down there. And that's the reality, Will. The Zika thing just becomes, you know, just becomes convenient and everybody kind of gives you a pass because of it. The reality now is Raonic, and this is what he admitted to me. We had a sit down interview on Monday. He came so close at Wimbledon. Finalist there at the All England Club. And he's looking at the hard court season and saying, I don't do well playing three straight weeks. So if I play Toronto, skip the flight down to Rio and the hoopla down there, take a week off after Toronto, play Cincinnati, where there's 1,000 tour points and, you know, upwards of $700,000 to be won, then skip another week and then get myself ready for the U.S. Open, I'm putting myself in the best situation to win a major. Yeah, he wants to be down there at the Olympics. He had a ball in London 2012. He walked in the opening ceremony. He was part of the Athletes Village. It was a great experience. But at this stage of his career, at the age of 25, coming that close to his first slam win, that close to his first major championship, he's being more realistic about the situation, saying, hey, there's a lot more that I have to take care of business-wise than I do otherwise. And I think a lot of other athletes in individual sports who are professionals, golfers, tennis players, are falling under the same boat.
If he didn't have that run at the All England Club, Mirage, is this conversation different today?
Maybe. And if the Olympics are not in Rio and they're in Chicago, you know, if they're around, it might be a different story. Look, these athletes, especially tennis players and golfers, are flying to different time zones and different continents all the time. Mm-hmm. Now Raonic, after Wimbledon, he came back to New York. Now he's in Toronto. Then he's going to Cincinnati. Then he's going back to New York. Over the course of 2 months now, his longest flight is 90 minutes, and he won't have to leave the time zone. That's valuable. That's a big, you know, for these guys who are high-performance athletes and what it does, It's a big deal, and that he feels will prepare him best for the Open. Maybe if it's not in Rio, maybe if it's somewhere else, maybe if he didn't make the run to Wimbledon final, it's a different story. But if ands and buts are candies and nuts, what a Merry Christmas it would be.
All that being said, I know where you're going to go on this next question, but it appears we're going to get a decision today from Eugenie Bouchard. What's your gut tell you there when she's committing to Rio or not?
Well, she says I'm a last-minute person. I want to make a last-minute decision. My gut is she's not going to go. You know, if you talk about somebody who needs the tour points more than anybody, it's definitely Bouchard. And I don't see her making the trip. I don't see her going down to the Olympics. I think there's a lot more that needs to be done for her in Montreal, Cincinnati, going into New York than it would be going down to Rio.
Arash Manati of Sportsnet's our guest on the South Street Burger guest hotline. Lou?
Arash, what has Wimbledon done for Milos, just even in your sit-down? And you guys have spent a lot of time together over the last 4 or 5 years. Is he tangibly different?
Pete, by the way, great to hear your voice, man. It's been too long.
Thanks, Charlie.
Yeah. Glad to have you back in the saddle. I think it's done a lot, Pete. I think, you know, fundamentally, one, it's given him the confidence that I've always thought I could contend with the big boys. Now I know. I can go to a slam and knock off Roger Federer on his court in his cathedral. I know now, he's never done this before, against David Goffin. He'd been down 2 sets to love and came back to win. That had never happened in his career. And so suddenly the confidence that gives you that I now belong with the big fellas, is significant. On top of all that, at Wimbledon, he showed to everybody and proved to himself that all the work he's put into his game, improving his net play, movement, just dictating when and how he wants, it's now all happening. And so he's very close to being the finished and polished product. Now, what happens is usually after Wimbledon, because it's a long stretch of clay court season and then the grass, a lot of players take some time off just to recharge their brain, recharge the batteries, recharge their body. Raonic went back to New York, got into the gym, and was on the court because he's like, I feel it. I'm that close to becoming a major champion. I don't want to disrupt this momentum and this rhythm. So he really, in his heart of hearts, believes he is that close to finally lifting a trophy and not a plate on the final Sunday of the Slam.
Now, I can't imagine that this performance hasn't done anything but amazing things for the event in Toronto.
Yeah, it has, and there's a lot of momentum with it. The unfortunate part, of course, is that Andy Murray, Roger Federer, and Rafael Nadal will play. But Novak Djokovic, the world number one, is going to take part, and Raonic is going to be there. Listen, I've been covering tennis now for, as full-time can be in this country, for 6 years. And I can't – just yesterday, we hosted a Rogers Cup kickoff event down beside City Hall in Toronto, next to that lit up Toronto sign. And it was with Raonic and the mayor, John Tory, and they, it was a grip and grin, and they went out on a little mini court and they played some mini tennis together. But there were 1,500 people there who on a Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, came downtown just for a glimpse at a tall, lanky kid from Thornhill, Ontario, who hit the tennis ball really hard. Now, I can't even imagine 6 years ago 150 people showing up to something like that. So it's just showing the growth, the momentum. And the cool part is, when you look at the participation numbers, now more than ever, more Canadian kids are picking up a tennis racket than ever before. And a lot of that is because now kids are saying, I want to be like Milos. I want to be like Jeannie. And for generations before, there was never that player or players who thought, the idea of a Canadian winning a slam, just the audacity of that was ridiculous. Now, kids are saying, hey, I want to be like them. And it's going to be interesting in the years to come what teenager now, what young kid now may blossom into becoming something else.
Now, Arash, and he'll play in this event, as it turns out. Will the young man who just won the junior title in London, is he maybe potentially on the verge of being something really, really good down the road?
Well, we'll see. Denis Shapovalov is his name. He just won the junior Wimbledon, as you mentioned, Pete. There's actually another kid who's 15, 16 years old. His name is Felix Auger-Aliassime. He's from Quebec. I interviewed him last summer. He got to the quarterfinals of a Tier 2 pro event. And I tell you, this kid, this Auger-Aliassime kid, looks like a CFL 3 safety. His torso is just massive. He's long. And, he'd be the stretch 4. He's your Patrick Patterson on the basketball court, too. And he's an athlete. His sister just went on a full ride on a tennis scholarship down south. His dad was a tennis player. His mother was a track athlete. He's the Andrew Wiggins of tennis in terms of the genes. So there's another generation kind of bubbling up that could very well take over. The question, the challenge is, it's one thing to do it in juniors, just like hockey, but it's another thing when you get up to play with the grown men. And can they translate the junior success to the men's tour? Can they continue to grow and improve? And can the body hold up? Just like for 82 games in the NHL, can they do that for 10 months on the pro tour with all the travel and all the individual challenges that come before them? That's going to be the big question.
Arash, before certainly we let you go and we've got some more time with you, I want to ask you, because I don't know if I've ever asked you, A, how excited you get about the Olympic Games. That would be A. Because I don't know. B, yeah. What are you excited about going into Brazil, despite I think most of us just hoping that everything goes off without a hitch, which it looks to me about as scary a time as we've ever seen going into one of these games.
Yeah, and it was interesting. I was watching a press conference with a French tennis player, Gael Monfils is his name. He's in Washington this week, and they asked him, you know, a lot of tennis players are pulling out. Why is it that you've decided to go to play? And Monfils' answer was, you know, just opened my eyes, because I think it's the same for everybody, regardless if you're an athlete or not. And Monfils' answer was, you know, it depends how you grew up. You know, it depends how you see the Olympics. Monfils said, for me, it's not just a tournament. It's about the atmosphere. It's what the Olympics mean. He said, I think we're lucky to be in an Olympic sport. It's a privilege to wear my country's colors. And amidst the hypocrisy and amidst the corruption of the International Olympic Committee, what I love about the Olympics is that it's still, for the most part, take the 5% of professionals away, 10% of professionals away, it's still kids, it's still athletes, it's still the person who's relatable to you, who works at the gym down the street, or is your college classmate, or is your fellow teacher, or, you know, who coaches your daughter. It's that person who's worked their entire lives up until that point to train for the moment to represent their country on the biggest of stages. Now, who's paid for that venue? Who's paid for that arena? What embezzlement has led to that, for that to happen? To me, these are two separate things, because once the competitors get there, they've done nothing wrong, so long as their doping test comes up clean. And that's still, you know, that feeling of the opening ceremony, and it's a little bit of jingoism, sure, but there's a powerful feeling when you walk out with 300 of your fellow Canadian athletes, and there's somebody waving the flag, and we don't know anything about Taekwondo athletes or wrestling athletes or their sport, but when we sit down on the couch to watch them, suddenly it's a different feeling every 4 years. And that, to me, Pete, I think it's a really important part of the overall sports movement. And I'll share one story with you that just I'll never forget. Was in London 2012. I was assigned to a women's wrestling event. Now, what the hell do we know about freestyle wrestling? But there was a woman, Tanya Verbeek, who was in the semifinal, and if she won, she'd compete for gold. And this was Tanya's third straight Olympics. And Tanya wins the semi, and we talked to her after. And she was going to be competing in the gold later that day, in the, you know, late afternoon. And she was going up against Saori Yoshida, who won gold in 2004 and gold in 2008. Tanya had a silver medal in 2004 and a bronze in 2008. And the Saori Yoshida of Japan was the 11-time defending world champion. Tanya loses to her in London 2012 in the gold medal match. She has a silver medal. She's beaming. It's her last Olympics. She's in her mid-30s. She's dedicated her life to this sport. And I'm not going to ask her about any kind of what happened in the match, because I frankly don't know, and I don't think anybody at home cares. So I asked her, I said, listen, in tennis, people wonder if not for Federer and Nadal, now Djokovic, would anybody else have kind of snuck through to win a major? You know, in golf, if not for Tiger and Mickelson, could somebody else have won a major? Do you wonder if not for this Japanese athlete, Saori Yoshida, maybe once in the last 12 years, that medal would be gold instead of silver? And she just looked at me, Pete, with this befuddled look, and she said, well, then what would the challenge be? And it blew me away, and I didn't even know what to say. And afterwards, she saw me in the hall. She's like, did I say something wrong? And I said, listen, I'm coming from a pro sports background. This was the summer after LeBron sat there in a checkered shirt and said he was taking his talents to South Beach. When LeBron chose the Miami Heat, what would the challenge be wasn't in his DNA. It's something we're not used to. And that's one thing that Olympic athletes bring. It's the challenge that motivates them to be the best. The challenge to want to beat the best in the world. And that's why, even amidst the billions of dollars that are siphoned into God knows what bank accounts, it's still the athletes that make the games unique and special. So a really long-winded answer, but I wanted to give you some context and background. as to why I think these games are so unique and so great.
And a terrific way to end, Arash, is it's a terrific story, and the Olympics are now less than 3 weeks away, and we'll wait and see what happens in Rio next month. Thank you for your time, and have fun next week.
All right, fellas, appreciate it.
It's Arash Madani joining us down the South Street Burger guest hotline for South Street Burger. Enjoy flame grill burgers paired with local craft beer. Visit their new location, now open in East Hills, 17th Avenue Southeast and Stony Trail. It's quite the response, wasn't it?
It was a great response. And, you know, I always like to ask people for their perspectives who have been around, who have, you know, Arash has covered a few Olympic games now. I had a chance earlier today, and we'll hear from Stephen Brunt coming up in the next hour, because, you know, the amount of international events and that gentleman's resume just absolutely blows my mind. Well, you know, it's funny, and people ask me a lot, why? Like, what is it that you get so excited about? And I don't even know how to answer it sometimes. Mm. But and like Arash, I'll be the first to admit, you know, unlike Stephen, and I'll get all wound up about it for sure, you know, when track and field starts, and I'll never forget, especially that Saturday night in Atlanta in 1996 when, you know, it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome to see Donovan Bailey win the gold medal himself, you know, to be the fastest man in the world. And if you're a little older like I am and went through, you know, in many ways, and I still in some ways feel sorry for, you know, what happened in 1988 and, you know, going through that whole thing where we all felt disappointed and let down a little bit. And yet at the end of the day, there was a Canadian athlete who just, you know, frankly, his doctors probably weren't very good and he got caught and it turned into something awful. But to watch the Canadian track and field team, the 4x100, you know, win in Atlanta and beat the United States, and what an accomplishment that was, you know, it is a great memory for someone who loves team sport. I admit it. I love all sport, but team sport for me, for whatever reason, really does it. And, you know, the Olympics, again, you know, there won't be a lot of people that necessarily are focused. Our women's basketball team just got named today. I was lucky enough last summer to be at the old Maple Leaf Gardens at Ryerson now. And, you know, I watched this Canadian women's team, which is virtually exactly the same team, you know, beat the United States to win the Pan American gold medal, and then watch their travels in Edmonton and watch them qualify. And, you know, what the soccer team on the women's side was able to do, and I'm still mad as hell at that referee for taking away what I think was a spot in the gold medal game from the soccer team. It was an incredible semifinal, and Christine Sinclair's performance in that semifinal, you know, really one of the greatest individual Canadian performances in sport. I've probably, you know, would be way up there what she did that day, to only have that rotten referee make a call that, frankly, to this point had never seen before and had never seen again on Aaron McLeod, the goalie, for handling the ball too long, which turned into the tying goal, and then the Americans ended up beating us and advancing, and we had a great win and probably shouldn't have won the bronze medal game, but did, and maybe some karma came back and allowed those ladies, you know, to win a bronze. But, you know, those are the stories to me. You know, had our basketball team been able to qualify, that would have been fantastic. A lot of people don't know that, you know, our men's volleyball team is back in the Olympics for the first time in a long time. And they were without their star player in another qualifying tournament in Edmonton. They didn't go through. They lost Gavin Schmidt, who's from Saskatoon, a big 6'10" power hitter, one of the premier volleyball players on the planet, and had to go through the back door in Japan a couple of months ago, and they qualified. You know, like Arash, more so probably for me, as I just mentioned, with team sports. But I just, you know, I love my country, and I want my country to be better in more things. And yet I think it is so unbelievable when, you know, Like, that women's basketball team, and yes, you know, a number of girls play in the WNBA, and we're producing more good players, but this is a big deal, Will. For those athletes, and I completely agree with Arash, that's what the Olympics are about. You know, people that have invested every single second. This is their big, big moment.
Mm.
And there will never be, you know, many bigger for a lot of these athletes that, frankly, it's not about the big money. It's not about all the pomp and circumstances. Frankly, in a lot of countries, including ours, we don't know who these people are. But this is it for them. You know, every time I think about, you know, athletes that devote a whole life and in one jump can change, you know, can change their world. One jump, 100-meter sprint. It's all about that. All about 10 seconds. All about a jump. It's a lot of investment and a lot of pressure, you know, for those moments.
It's going to be incredible. The Rio Olympics, less than 3 weeks away. We'll have plenty to talk about as we enter the final hour of the program. I believe I will stick around and help you out, Lou, as we had some things fall through this morning. So we'll figure something out. We'll discuss some more things around the corner. It is 9 o'clock. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Back to Boomer in the Morning with Ryan Pinder on Sportsnet 960. Audio on demand, podcast, streaming live. Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet.ca/960.
A little bit behind, but it's all good. 9:05 on your Friday morning. Continuing along with you, it's Will Nault and Peter Labardius. A lot of stuff happening this morning, and we'll take it back to last night and take a look at some of the storylines for today with the Pinder Report.
The Pinder Report for Motorworks, the only independent shop that works exclusively on BMWs with only BMW trained technicians. Google Motorworks Calgary or visit them just east of Chinook Mall.
Now, Will, this is different than the Pin It on Pinder, right?
This is correct. We don't have to listen to that again.
Did you guys want to play that again?
No, I think we're good. Lou, you have a thought?
You know, to quote my good friend Captain Obvious, I don't need it right now.
I think I have that clip in here somewhere.
Yeah. And I'm not even up on the roof now.
I don't need it right now.
I love it. There's been 100. They're all good.
Oh,
but
man.
That one is still my absolute favorite.
It's so good.
You know, she walks by. He's already got his hotel picked in Hawaii. He just thinks it's all going to come to fruition for him. It's all going to pan out.
Thinks it's the greatest day in his life.
Greatest day in his life. You know, he's got the hotel all picked out, and she walks right by to some other chachi.
Hotels.com.
Yeah. I don't need it right now.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. It's one of the greats for sure.
I like the one too that's out right now. Hotels.com. It was the dad.
It was the dad.
Yeah.
Hello, you.
And then the other one we had fun with last year was the hotel down the hallway, Janice.
Oh, Janet. Hotels.com is more helpful than Janet. Jerry, it's Wednesday.
Oh, that's classic.
Yeah.
There's a free plug for hotels.com.
Yeah, no kidding.
We continue along this morning. The Pinder Report. Last night, Lou, just a quick thought or two. We've spent some time on it this morning, but the Stampeders improved to 2-1-1 on the year. 33-18 victorious in Winnipeg, and they continue that hot streak off the bye, 13-0 since 2005.
Well, they don't miss in that situation. Bo Levi Mitchell, I thought, did a wonderful job setting the tone in the first half. But really, in many ways, well, the difference, the Stampeders turned 3 Winnipeg turnovers into what? Touchdowns. And in that sport, at the end of the day, if you win the turnover battle and your ratio is better than the other team and you turn it into big points, I like your chances of winning. And in many ways, though, even after a fabulous first half and a second half that in part offensively stalled a little bit in comparison, That 75-yard drive after Matt Nichols had come in and they'd cut the gap to 8 after the two-point conversion to cut it to 26-18, the job that that offense did, I thought Jerome Messam was huge in that drive, made a couple of big runs, key plays, and Bo Levi Mitchell looked like an all-star on that drive, the way he orchestrated it, put it into the end zone. Great catch by Bakari Grant. You prefaced that earlier in the show today, down at around the 5-yard line. That was a championship-looking drive to put that team away, and that is not a championship-type team that they played last night, the team that they have both their wins over this season.
I know in the CFL, money does talk when it comes to player salaries. I think that's the same in any sport, really. But boy, oh boy, I the more I think about it, Lou, and the more we've had this conversation, I just don't know if you go back to Drew Willey next game, if you're Mike O'Shea, and the reason for that, it's not necessarily a knock on Drew Willey. He hasn't been good, but I certainly think, he hasn't been awful. He's not been great. But at the same time, I just think going to Matt Nichols could give your team a spark and maybe something, some sort of a wake-up call to say this is not good enough. I think rolling out the same lineup and just not making a lot of changes could be bad for you when you're 1-4 and you need something to happen. That's why I kind of lean towards more going towards Matt Nichols next week when they continue playing week 6.
Well, I think I do too. And, you know, defensively, they've done some pretty good things, although last night their defensive backfield was crushed with injuries. They lost not one, not two, but 3 players, and we'll see if any of them are able to return for Winnipeg's next game. But, you know, this was a team that had some high hopes, that did a lot of things, promising things in the off season under general manager Kyle Walters. Looked like they were poised to be much better, and it just hasn't gone very well. And on offense, they have really struggled, so if ever there was a time, I would think it's right now. However, does Matt Nichols really provide a much better option? A lot of his best work came late in the game last night, and I think you always have to keep that in mind when you assess any type of performance.
Especially in that sport.
Especially in that sport. And some would suggest that can be the case in a lot of other games, like in hockey with 3-0 leads.
Yeah.
We don't need to drum that up on a July Friday afternoon. We can save that for September and October and November and December. But it's true. And if you're in Winnipeg, you need something good to happen. And despite all the money that they're paying to Drew Willey, you know, maybe more than anything, he needs a little wake-up call of his own. Maybe it only, you know, last for one half where he's not the guy, but something's got to change there. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
So the Stampeders will be finally at home. It's funny. It's almost the end of July, and the Stampeders have played one home game, and that was against Winnipeg back in week 2 on Canada Day. They're back at home next Friday.
Big one. Big one.
July 29th at home against the BC Lions, 8 o'clock kickoff. And the way BC has started the year, it certainly is shaping up to be quite the showdown early on. BC's on a bye this week, and they will enter that game with a 3-1 record. Calgary at 2-1-1. Winnipeg next Thursday in Edmonton to face the defending Grey Cup champion Eskimos. Continue along, the Austin Matthews contract dispute is over, if there even was one, as the first overall pick signs a deal with the Maple Leafs yesterday. It's your standard 3-year entry-level deal, $925,000 per season, but he does have $2.85 million in performance bonuses tied into that contract, and Austin Matthews is happy. It's now in the rearview mirror.
To me, it was never an issue or a concern, but now that I've signed and everything's been agreed upon, it's definitely a pretty special feeling.
He's a North America kid, but he did play last year in Switzerland. So as a result, we don't really know much about him in terms of what he can bring at the North America level. Although we've seen 2 pretty good performances at the World Juniors last Christmas season and at the World Championships last year in Russia. Safe to say, though, Lou, I don't think an 18-year-old is ready for the pressure that Toronto brings, but I think this guy definitely has his head in the right spot.
No, I don't think there's any question. He seems to have the right demeanor. He's very calm and cool and pretty collected. It doesn't seem like a whole lot phases him. And I even feel that way when I watch him on the ice and in the different tournaments that I've watched him in over the last few years, going all the way back to watching him at the World Under 18 Championships a couple of years ago, where he and New Flames prospect Matthew Tkachuk put on quite a show and an American gold medal winning performance in that event. But, you know, the other thing to remember is, and doesn't really matter a whole lot, let's not forget, he was a late birthday. So, you know, he's really a 19-year-old hockey player this year rather than 18. And, you know, his maturation was probably helped in part by what went on in Switzerland. It's not a big concern for me, Will, but worry a little bit about the schedule. He's never played a big schedule in terms of amounts of games, but this is just a player. And I was asked a couple of months ago, you know, would he have been better served in the Western League? And, if, you know, as a huge Western League guy, I mean, I would have loved to have seen him last year. And, you know, Everett, what a difference he might have made had he played. Imagine him and Tyson Jost both on that team. Oh. Oof. Probably would have been playing for, you know, the title against Brandon in the spring. But and I don't think there's any doubt about that, because they're a pretty good team without those two guys.
Yeah.
You know, there's a minor concern, but when you're as good and as talented as he is, you're going to make it there and be in the position that he's in. What I'm really curious now to see, despite the fact that everybody knows I'm not a real big fan of the team and Team North America, and even though I'm not a big fan, I'm fascinated by the whole group and how those young players are going to play. And I want to see again, you know, how is he going to compete, and how good is he going to be on that team?
It's going to be incredible. And I wonder too about his teammate and the future for Mitch Marner at the NHL level. It's going to be an interesting group to watch this season. The Toronto Maple Leafs have signed first overall pick Austin Matthews to his entry level contract. And now all the top picks from last year's draft have inked their entry-level deals, so no holdouts and nothing going on crazy in terms of the first-round picks from last June's draft. Wait and see how many are on NHL rosters next October. One guy that'll be in the NHL for certain is New York Rangers forward Chris Kreider. He avoids arbitration today with the Rangers, signing a four-year deal worth $4.625 million per season. This was an arbitration case that was supposed to go today, Lou, but he becomes the 10th of 25 cases to avoid arbitration so far. The next two coming on Monday, but Kreider gets his long-term extension. He's going to be with the Rangers for the next 4 years.
And gets pretty much in the neighborhood he was looking for. Well, the reports I read was he was hoping for the $4.75 million range, and he falls just short of that with a four-year deal for a player who's been a two-time 20-goal scorer and has been in that 45-point window the last few years, has done some nice things as well for the Rangers and a couple of excellent runs in the spring. Mentioned it earlier, I'll say it again. His skill set is enormous. Big, strong, nasty, can skate, drives to the net. I've always thought that potentially he could be a 30-goal guy rather than, you know, a 20-goal guy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason as well to this point, I think, and there's still time. He's 25. But we'll see how this new deal, if it has any effect. And I do. I think there's more there productivity-wise from Kreider.
Yeah, back-to-back 21-goal seasons, four-year deal, $4.625 million per season in terms of an annual average value. It's worth $18.5 million over the 4 years. The Islanders are looking to stay in Brooklyn, but it could be short-lived. After just one season at the Barclays Center, Bloomberg is reporting the Islanders in discussions with the owners of the New York Mets to build a hockey arena close to Citi Field in the suburb of Queens. The team's transition to Brooklyn has not been smooth. The sight lines are not good. It's a basketball-specific arena. 1,500 seats have obstructed views. You've called a game in that building. Lou, what did you make of this story when it came across yesterday.
Well, it's not a good hockey building. The ice is awful. The situation for the players is less than enviable in terms of where they live to where they have to get and the traffic and everything that goes hand in hand in the New York area. So that was a big pain in the rump for them, even though they made out pretty well season-wise and, you know, won a round in the playoffs as well this spring. Queens is closer to Long Island in terms of, you know, continuing to keep with that fan base. I won't be surprised, Will, if it's short-lived. I just, the building is not a very good hockey building. And it's a lot like the old America West in downtown Phoenix. A lot of, like, trust me, I went up in that section. You can't see from the face-off dot in at that end of the rink. Are you going to go sit there?
No.
Not a chance.
Pay $130 for a ticket and you can't see?
No, thank you.
And doesn't sound like fun.
No, it's a beautiful building. It's just not made for hockey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a basketball first, and we all know the dimensions.
That's why they built it.
The dimensions are not the same in basketball and hockey, so it doesn't really always work out that way.
No.
So we'll wait and see how that story plays out.
It smells great.
Yeah, that's what you said. All about the Febreze.
Smells great in there.
Round two of the RBC Canadian Open is underway at Glen Abbey from Oakville, Ontario. All eyes on a Canadian amateur who's yet to tee off today, but he'll tee off a little bit later on this afternoon. 21-year-old Calgary-born amateur Jared Dutoit shoots a 5-under 67. Right now, just one shot back of American Luke List, who is in sole possession of number one. He is 6-under par. He is yet to tee off as well for round number two. Quite the up and down day, though, Lou, for Dustin Johnson.
No kidding.
He was not very good on the front nine. He was able to salvage it in the last couple of holes, and now he sits a 1-over through 10. So he recovers. He was at one point 3-over on this round. He has since hit 2 birdies, and as a result is 1-over through 10. He is one shot back at 5-under par.
And he's starting to roll. He just made a 7-footer to save par, and he is he looks like he's back on track a little bit because it did not start well. He had a bogey in his first hole, then he had a double bogey on hole number three, but he looks like he's turned it around a little bit now.
And Graham Dillette and David Hearn, both guys will be representing Canada in Rio next month, and both will need a pretty big day today to avoid the cut. Not a good opening round for Graham Dillette. He shot a 5-over 77 in round one. As for David Hearn, he shot a 2-over 74, so both needing a big day today in round number two. We'll keep our eye on it as the day continues. Tune into the Big Show for live updates on that leaderboard as round two continues from Oakville, Ontario.
Well, did you see poor Graham around the green yesterday?
No, I did not.
Oh.
Struggling?
If you see some highlights from yesterday, and I love Graham, you know, he was minus one going to the ninth hole yesterday and looked like he had it on track. He had a couple of shots around the green yesterday that, you know, pros, they don't hit balls like that. They just don't. You have to go and take a look at a couple of these shots on YouTube. There he was, you know, great guy. He's been a friend of our station. There he was yesterday. Noticed him with he's got the Calgary Flames insignia on his scorebook that he carries around. Boy, did I feel bad for him because right now, and it's been pretty well documented, a big reason why he struggled this year, he's got the yips around the greens when it comes to chipping and putting. And there was two or three shots yesterday that, like I said, I hate to talk about it because I'm such a big supporter and a big fan. And, you know, unlike some others, this guy can't get to Rio fast enough. And maybe it's the Olympics that's going to turn his world around. And wouldn't that be great if, you know, that's where he got his first big win. But holy cow, if you haven't seen that footage, it really is hard to believe that someone of his ilk that's that good could struggle around the greens, chipping in and around greens the way he did yesterday.
Kind of like Ernie Els at the first hole in Augusta?
Yeah, very similar. Very similar.
Graham Dillette, by the way, on the course today for round number two. Not going well. He's 2-over through 10. He's 7-over for the tournament.
Ugh,
and
poor guy.
Does not look like he will make the cut as right now the projected cut at one over par. That'll do it for the second edition of the Pinder Report.
The Pinder Report for Motorworks, the only independent shop that works exclusively on BMWs with only BMW trained technicians. Google Motorworks Calgary or visit them just east of Chinook Mall.
Way behind schedule, but we should get to the text line and transition right into what you want to talk about.
Talk about.
Talk about.
Talk about.
What you want to talk about with Boomer and Pinder, brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. Enjoy the summer clear out sales event. Receive 0% for up to 84 months and employee pricing. Jeep start at $15,997. Go to varsitychrysler.com.
I would imagine some of the regular crowd is already at work or somewhere else, but 40 minutes behind schedule, we're still going to get to it. What do you want to talk about?
I was just kind of wondering, where that segment was today. But, you know, we got going with the rash and, You know, it's our show. It's different. The other guys aren't around. So that's what happens.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 924, get your text in, 960-960 on your mobile phone. Will Monahan and Johnny be signed by the World Cup?
Yes.
I would sure hope so.
Yes, I don't think there's any doubt it will be done by then.
When is the Fan 960 going to bring on Snoop Dogg as a CFL insider? I don't know if you saw that footage from this week, Lou, but...
No, I didn't.
He watched CFL for the first time. He was hanging out at a hotel room in Canada somewhere. He found the CFL and was just... he was just dumbfounded by some of the rules.
Watch a Canadian football. Long-ass field. Get to go in motion any way they want to go. And the score is 4-0. Can you believe this? The score is 4-0. I think I'm going to try out for a CFL team and see if I can get mine on. Come on, 4 points, 4-0. What's going on? A challenge flag? What the f***? Man, please.
Well, by the way, if people don't know, his son is an excellent receiver. He's on a full-ride scholarship at UCLA, and I don't know if you caught any of it, and I can't even remember what the name of the documentary, but I watched several shows about his son at a high school in Las Vegas, and old Snoop is like, you want to talk about intense. This guy is beyond intense. I didn't see or hear of that until, you know, you just played it, until Jay just played it. The last time I saw Snoop involved in anything was his family on Celebrity Family Feud. Whoa. With Steve Harvey.
I thought you were going to say his first pitch in San Diego.
No, I saw that.
That was junk, too.
Well, straight junk. But this guy is, even on The Feud, he was some kind of intense.
Love it.
Of course, the first question they asked him about, and it wasn't set up at all, of course, was about a question involving marijuana.
Shocked.
Which he knows nothing about.
No, he's never dipped his toe in that pool.
Whoa.
960-960 on your mobile phone. Can you ask Lubo about all these Johnny wants to go home sooner rather than later rumors? Is that holding up current talks?
You know what? Listen, until I hear it straight from the horse's mouth, I think it's more talk than anything. Yes, he's very close to his family. Yes, they're from New Jersey, just about 20 minutes away, really, from the arena in Philadelphia. He have a lot of family and friends there, yes, who would probably love to see him playing closer to there, absolutely. Is it a factor? I can't say no for sure, but I think at this point there's a lot being made about it. And really, you know, we're going to find out, because the term of that deal, my guess, might tell you something about whether there is any credence to that talk.
Lubo, you sound great today. By the way, how do you smell?
I smell terrific.
Yeah, I smell pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah,
The heat hasn't...
No, it can be a factor. You got to watch yourself, you know, but I don't mind splashing on a little cologne, and I make sure I shower on a very regular basis and try my best to look after things.
960 on your mobile phone. Lubo, on the free agent market right now, who do you see as potentially a target for the Flames on the blue line?
Ooh, potentially on the blue line for the Flames. You know, there's a few guys. It's funny, we mentioned Luke Shen earlier today. That wouldn't shock me at the right price. You know, this is still a guy 25, 26 years old. Obviously, you know, some good years left. I think, you know, for Luke, things have settled in terms of he is what he is at this point in time. Probably, you know, a pretty solid third pairing guy that, you know, you could play in your second pairing. Wouldn't shock me. Not saying that I've necessarily heard that from anyone, but I do. I think the Flames are potentially going to be in the market to add some depth on defense.
960 on your mobile phone. Lou, do you have any idea right now? I know it's July, but who would you pick to replace Joe Colburn on the second line?
Who I would pick to replace Joe Colburn on the second line? Well, a lot of that probably depends on how the first line is going to be structured. There's a lot of people that think, you know, Gaudreau, Monahan, and Troy Brouwer. We'll see if that's the case. You know, Frolik would have to be certainly deserve some consideration. And what happens for sure, Will, with Sam Bennett? You know, I think they're going to have a decision to make. They want to play him at center. I think that's where they'd like to have him. And here's another one. I'm not going to rule the new kid out of that spot yet either.
Interesting.
But there's a lot of things that have to fall into play. I would say, you know, if I was a betting man, we'll see how things go. You know, that's still an area of concern for the club. But again, if we're talking about Colburn, like, where are we slotting him to begin with?
Yeah.
Right? So I wouldn't really look back.
Well, and are you getting second half Colburn or first half Colburn?
Well, that too. But I mean, I think part of the scenario with Joe, and I said it on this program a month ago. If you don't like Joe Colburn, you don't like human beings. And I mean that. He is one of the finest people I have ever dealt with in sport in 32 years of doing what I do in radio and television. So I could not speak more highly. He had a really, really good year. It's hard for me to answer that question, and it's a good question because where really was he on the depth chart? Is he a second-line winger? Is he a center? Is he a third-line guy? So that one's hard for me to answer.
Couple more at 960-960 on your mobile phone. Lou, you're a pretty good this is me speaking, not the text, but Lou, you're a pretty good judge of character. So I figured this text is perfect for you. Hey Lou, could you see Monahan as the captain of Team North America?
Could I see him as the team captain of North America? That's a great question. I could see him wearing a letter.
Yeah.
I love the question. I haven't given it a ton of thought in terms of who I think will be the captain of that team, but, you know, I would certainly think that he'll garner some consideration for wearing a letter.
I know people in this city won't like to hear it, but I have to happen to think that a guy named Connor McDavid might be wearing that captaincy.
Probably a pretty good chance. I would also think that a young defenseman who's pretty good in Florida named Ekblad.
What's he done?
He's pretty good, that guy.
Oh, what a contract he signed as well. In Florida. Florida's done some work this offseason.
They spent a lot of money.
Just a couple more with you, Lou. If Gaudreau wanted to go play at home, why would he have signed in Calgary out of college? He could have just pulled a Vasey and signed in Philly.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. Right, that's a good point. I like that point. I do think things change. And the one thing I would say, and I'm not trying to give any credibility to any type of talk that he might be headed that way, don't you think that things are a little bit different for Johnny now than they were then? Let's be honest, people. Did anybody really think or feel 100% sure that Johnny would be the type of NHL player that he has turned into when he started? Come on.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really can say that you knew for sure, I want to meet you. Because you have to be one of the smartest people I've ever met. There were a lot of odds that would have suggested that things would have not worked out anywhere near how they have.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take that into some consideration when you think about what he might have done then, as opposed to now, you know, somebody who I think is going to be a point-per-game type player as long as he stays healthy for a long time. That's the type of capabilities this guy has.
The text line also on 960-960 on your mobile phone. Does James Wisniewski as number 5 D-man who's just been bought out in Carolina make sense for the Calgary Flames?
He's really struggled. He's been hurt a lot. I like James. A few years ago was a really good player. Again, there's so much up in the air, and it's interesting to me because things on the Flames' defense, even contractually, will look a lot different at this time next year than they do right now, because you have a big ticket obviously in Dennis Wiedemann with 1 year left, and I think he's a really underrated guy, even though you spend a lot of money on him, and that's Derek Englund. But where are you going to go?
Mm-hmm.
And you hope, and I think he showed signs of it, who your top three are. That's easy. Is Jukka Pekka going to be ready to be a full-time four guy? We also don't know that, Dennis doesn't come back and potentially look this year a lot more the way he did two seasons ago as opposed to, that aberration last season. And maybe something gets done with him potentially prior to the start or maybe even during the season. So, yes. Do I think that Brad Treliving and the Flames are in the market to add some more veteran help on defense? Yeah, I do.
Two more as we wrap up this segment. And I think you're probably going to go the same direction for both of these.
Okay.
Question one, I'll throw them both out before you respond. Question one, does Jiří Hudler play in the NHL this season? And question two, Lou, do you believe that Dennis Wiedemann will finish the season with the Calgary Flames?
Whew. I'll answer number two. If I was a betting man, which I'm not, I would say no. And on the Hudler front, I'm not sure he's going to be in the league this year.
Sure is interesting. He is still without a contract. He's a UFA. Wait and see what happens, but we're here on July 22nd, and I really have not heard his name anywhere in terms of...
No, neither have I, and you know what? And you know, Will, I said this a couple of years ago. With how I saw the game trending, and listen, Jiří has great hands. He makes plays, thinks the game. But in a league that is getting faster and faster, really by the minute... he's not a spring chicken anymore, and he doesn't have great feet. And I wondered even 2 years ago when he was having his great year what things might look like by about this time or certainly by next season. We'll see.
That'll do it for what you want to talk about. When we come back, we'll revisit a conversation we had with Stephen Brunt, Olympics, Blue Jays, CFL. A lot of stuff to cover with Stephen Brunt. We'll talk about that around the corner. It is 9:37, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
What you want to talk about with Boomer and Pinder, brought to you by Varsity Chrysler. Enjoy the summer clear-out sales event. Receive 0% for up to 84 months and employee pricing. Jeeps start at $15,997. Go to VarsityChrysler.com.